All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry. I was a Chief Warrant Officer, second grade, in the United States Army in 1969. I flew helicopters in Vietnam during that wonderful year. And I want to welcome you to Veterans Radio today. We've got a really special program. We're going to be talking a lot about female veterans today. And we've got some great guests in the studio. Joining me is going to be Melissa Engel, and Melissa is a counselor at the VA hospital. She also works with a lot of student veterans groups around the colleges in the Ann Arbor area. And Melissa, I want to welcome you to the program.
Thanks, Dale.
It's great to see you again.
It's good to see you, too.
And also is my partner in crime over here as far as a former helicopter pilot herself, and that's Kate Melcher, whose job right now is executive director of the Fisher House of Michigan. And Kate, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Always great to be here. Thanks, Dale.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I want to ask our audience also, if you have any questions for today's program, make sure you give us a call here at Veterans Radio. Today's number is 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600. And I would be very remiss if I did not acknowledge our sponsors, since we need sponsors here on Veterans Radio to keep us going. That would be Legal Help for Veterans here in Michigan. That's legalhelpforveterans.com. They handle all disability claims for you. If you've been denied, if you're applying for the first time, go to Legal Help for Veterans and .com, and they'll start working on your claim right away. U.S. Wings down in Hudson, Ohio, the manufacturers of these really great leather flight jackets that we've been giving away once a month. So you could go to our website, click on I Want the Jacket, and we have a drawing on the last Sunday of every month when we do our benefits program. And we've given away, I think, about four of them so far, and they're all over the country, California, Maryland. The last one was Wisconsin, so go and do that. I also want to thank the American Legion, here in Ann Arbor, the VFW, and the Vietnam Veterans of America for their support for Veterans Radio. And again, as I mentioned, we always need that support. Sounds like I'm begging for money, but not really. But we do encourage you to check out our website. That's veteransradio.net. We've got probably almost 15 years worth of programs up in our archives there right now. So let's get right into what we're going to talk about. And I know that both of you have announcements. So Melissa, I'm going to go to you first. And Melissa runs a program for female veterans coming up shortly.
Yeah, we've got a program called Tribe Talks. It's going to be going May 9th through 12th over on the campus of Camp Liberty outside of Brooklyn, Michigan. And this is an ongoing program. What I've been doing is rotating male and female veterans through the program and trying to help improve their growth.
So I guess I'm stuttering today. Anyway,
it's because you're in the presence of glory here.
I know.
Beautiful women making you nervous.
They are.
It's all the estrogen in the air.
Yeah, it is warm in here. But the question I thought I was going to ask whenever I get to it is, your programs that you're doing, your Tribe Talk programs, could you explain them in a little bit more detail?
Sure. Okay, so the VA does a wonderful job of providing evidence-based psychotherapies for post-traumatic stress. They do it better than anybody does. But what my issue and what I noticed was a problem is that the majority of veterans that are diagnosed with post-traumatic stress will not sign up for the programs. And if they do sign up for the programs, only a minority of them will successfully complete them. And when we have 20 suicides a day with our veteran population, we're not doing enough to reach out and we're not doing enough to help. And the traditional model may work for some, but it doesn't work for everyone. Mm-hmm. And so in my own personal life, what has been extremely helpful to me as a person with post-traumatic stress is the concept of post-traumatic growth. And it's the idea that even though you've gone through something traumatic and disturbing that really wasn't your choice, most likely, to encounter, that there are positive psychological changes that can happen as a result of that. We know from Vietnam era POWs that came back that they had significantly less PTSD than was anticipated. Mm-hmm. So it was in the early 1970s that they started to really look at positive psychology and ask, why did some people come back or go through horrendous, you know, traumas, but they feel more fulfilled in their life afterwards. So we know that the majority of people at some point in their life will experience trauma, whether it's natural disaster, car accidents, assault, combat, any of those things can certainly produce and will produce a negative effect. That mm-hmm. effect could be temporary, or that effect can be more long lasting. And positive psychology comes in and says, yes, this has happened to you, but how do we make lemonade out of those lemons, and mm-hmm. what good can be salvaged from that, and what growth can still happen? And so I created Tribe Talks as a program based on that growth principle. So we're not an evidence-based VA psychotherapy. They're already doing that, and they're doing that well. This is an alternative for individuals who have either gone through those programs and still have some residual issues and things that they want to look at, or who are unwilling to get standardized treatment and want something that's more community-based and that's more veteran-led. So I created the program back in 2018 with Staff Sergeant Sean Durfee. He was a Marine Corps veteran and a student intern of mine. And he said, you know, Melissa, like, this program I went to out west was an amazing program. And so I started asking him about it. And I said, well, you know what? We should create a program out here. We should do it in Michigan. So I started mm-hmm. to look around. And from what I can see, there's only three programs in the country that are offering post-traumatic growth-based programs for veterans. Mm-hmm. And Tribe Talks happens to be the only one in Michigan, so I'm really proud of it. We've worked really hard. We've done a lot of good work so far.
And the one is coming up this weekend?
Yeah, we've got Thursday through Sunday. We've got our women veterans that are coming over to participate in that. And then I'm going to have a follow-up infantry male veteran cohort coming up in July, in mid-July. So if there's anybody out there listening who's interested in participating, I do have a wait list right now for the female cohort, but I'm happy to take that information. We tend to have last-minute cancellations because the idea of going away for 4 days and dealing with trauma doesn't mm-hmm. always sit so well as you get closer
right.
to it.
I think so.
Yeah. And then I have a full open class schedule for July with the men. So if anyone's interested, they can email me at tribetalksprogram@gmail.com okay. or they can give me a call at 586-222-3391.
3391.
That's me.
Got it. Okay.
You'll get me directly.
We'll be back with you. All right. So, Kate, I know that there are a lot of things coming up. We mentioned earlier on that Kate Melcher is the executive director for Fisher House here in Michigan, and her main task in life right now is to raise funds and come up with these ideas. So tell me what's coming up in the near future. I know there's a big match thing going on right now.
That's right. It's one of my most favorite times of the year, because two times a year we solicit corporate donors who have some deep pockets and who make all of us that don't have deep pockets feel a whole lot better about how far our donor dollar goes. Mm-hmm. So right now we're in the middle of the Memorial Day match. Now through June 30th, any dollar you donate to Fisher House Michigan is doubled dollar for dollar up to $500,000.
Whoa.
We had a really generous yet anonymous corporate donor decide that $500,000 is what we needed to help bring Fisher Houses to Ann Arbor and Detroit. So you can give online. You can send checks through the mail. All of this information is available at fisherhousemichigan.org. We also encourage you to follow us on social media, primarily Facebook and Instagram. That's where we celebrate major gifts. Mm-hmm. In fact, our kickoff gift for the Memorial Day match came out of a Sons of the American Legion group out of Howell, Post 141. Mm-hmm. The Sons and the women of the auxiliary got together and they pitched in $5,600 the day the match kicked off to encourage others to join them. So it's excellent. We're super excited about that. You know, while we're celebrating these gifts as a living memorial to folks that we've lost, Memorial Day can be a tough time for a bunch of us. And I have the honor this year of participating in two different events on Memorial Day. I'll be the grand marshal of my hometown parade in Saline, Michigan.
Wow.
Awesome. And I've been asked to make some remarks at the conclusion of the parade at the cemetery off Michigan Avenue there. And then I will zoom right over to Ypsilanti to the Vietnam Memorial. Our friend John Kinzinger asked me to make some remarks there, and I'm incredibly honored that the generation of Vietnam vets is inviting a more modern veteran to give some thoughts about Memorial Day on sacred ground there in Ypsi. So I'm very humbled and excited to be speaking at those occasions.
Well, I think that's terrific. I know I'll be out in Manchester on Memorial Day. My son is a band director out there, and so that's where I've been for the last 20 years. And it's one of those things that I get really emotional about. Memorial Day for our listeners is to memorialize those that did not come home. And that's why it's always so emotional and traumatic for some veterans, to even go to a parade, because you're going to start seeing all those men and women nowadays that will be flashing before your eyes when they play Taps at the end of the parade or at the end of the ceremony.
Right.
It's always gut-wrenching, I think, for everyone that's out there, and I appreciate you doing that. On a really lighter note, for those of us, there's a skate thing coming up, and I wanted you to talk a little bit about that, because that's dangerous.
This is incredibly exciting. The Ann Arbor Ice Cube is one of a handful of facilities around the nation that was awarded some grant money to host a free skate fest, and they are targeting military service members, veterans, their families, and anyone who has mobility limitations, because they're offering a free skate clinic. So on June 9th, there's two different sessions. You've got to go online and sign up to hold your spot, but you can bring up to 4 family members. It's a great time to get out on the ice with your kids, whether you've done it before or not. They have instructors there that will help you stay upright as much as possible. And they also have different equipment for adaptive skating.
They do.
Yes. So folks who have mobility limitations or who might be missing a limb, there are all different types of setups that the Ann Arbor Ice Cube will have available for those folks. Those who have those types of limitations do not need to be a military service member or veteran.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm so excited. You know, what else should we be doing in June, in Michigan? Let's go hit the ice.
The ice just melted finally.
Right.
I think I just noticed some in my backyard this morning. But the other thing is that, June, of course, is a very busy month for you. In addition to your fundraiser, your skating, is that there's going to be a realization that this Fisher House is actually going to occur.
That's right. You guys have been hearing me talk about Fisher House for the last couple of years, and it's always been, we don't have a Fisher House. We don't have a Fisher House. We really need one. And you know that we're getting one in Ann Arbor and in Detroit with the community support that we've garnered and the support that we still need. But we'll actually have shovels in the ground on June 14th.
Okay.
So I ask you to pay attention to the Ann Arbor VA's social media feed. It's actually Dr. Jenny Kreisman who's hosting the event, and so she'll be putting out information about when the event is, parking, which can be a bit of a challenge at the VA, all of those sorts of things. But if you want to come actually see the realization of your gifts, June 14th is a great time to do it.
Do you recall what time it's going to be?
10 in the morning.
10 in the morning.
Yes.
Oh, I should be up by then.
It is Flag Day. It's the Army birthday.
Oh.
There's so much stuff going
Holy
on that day. But,
that's right, it is Flag Day.
Yes.
That's
what,
hey, folks, remember, fly your flag, not just on Flag Day, every day. Every day. Get it out there, put a light on it so you can leave it out all night.
That's right.
Just my.
Well, I'm going to add to your PSA there, Dale. You know, this time of year, we realize that the flags that we've been flying all winter tend to be a little bit ratty and whatnot.
Yes, they do.
There are proper procedures for disposing of those flags. Head to your local VFW post, American Legion post. Most of them have bins to collect them, and they know how to handle the proper disposal of the flag. Make sure you're flying a fresh flag that looks good and really represents our colors the way that it should.
Yeah, one with 50 stars would be good.
Right.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Melissa and Kate a little bit more about female veterans and some of the issues that they go through that differ from what I go through. And so we're going to take a break. We'll be right back after this. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we're talking about female veterans today. And guests include Melissa Engel, who is a counselor for the Ann Arbor VA, and Kate Melcher, who is the executive director of the Fisher House, Michigan. And I want to go back to Melissa to talk a little bit about, you know, you have this post-traumatic growth program that you're working on. But my question would be, have you noticed a difference in your counseling experience? Because you have been working at the VA for quite a while. You've been a counselor for a number of years. Not to look at her and say, well, she's been doing it for 50 years. No, she hasn't. But, and that you, you know, you work with students quite a bit. What do you see as a difference between female veterans and male veterans?
I would say that female veterans in general are more agreeable to approaching me and getting to know what I do on their campus or within the program that they happen to be in. Male veterans tend to, I would say, be a little bit more like, I'll talk to you if I need you. I think the women are a little bit more conscientious of saying, well, who are you? And I might need you, or my friend might need you. Although veterans in general are very good at saying, hey, I know another veteran that needs you. Can I give him your card? Mm-hmm. So, my overall experience is that some of the issues they tend to bring to the counseling session are different. And some of the traumas that they've gone through tend to be unique to the gender. And it's unfortunate. Some of my frustration would be that a lot of the female veterans that I work with have a history of military sexual trauma. And it's the majority of them, it seems, that I meet. So obviously I have a little bit of a skewed sample of folks that I talk to, but I don't see that as common as an issue, although I have seen it with male veterans.
Mm-hmm. And you, you're continuing your education because you want to specialize in this post-traumatic growth.
Right. So I'll be starting in the fall at Oakland University in their psychology doctoral program, and I specifically chose that facility because they have Kaneko Taku. She's a world's leading researcher on post-traumatic growth, and what I really wanted to do was take the programming and the services that I'm offering to veterans out in the community and start to research that. One of the things that we know about the government or the VA is that they prefer evidence-based treatments. So, you know, we want to know that it works before we start trying experimenting on our veterans, right? Which is a really good thing.
Yeah, it is.
And so if you don't have evidence with you, it's hard to stand up in the crowd and shout, hi, hey, what about post-traumatic growth? What you really need is to say, look at this evidence that we can facilitate growth, we can increase growth, we can amplify that, and these are the ways that veterans may need some unique services. So we know a lot about post-traumatic growth with cancer survivors, and we know a lot about it after natural disaster, and we know it from a multicultural perspective, but there's literally no published research at all on veterans and post-traumatic growth. I know this because when I called the VA Center for PTSD in Boston after doing an exhaustive search, I said, do you guys have anything coming down the pike? Well, what are we doing? She said, no one's doing anything on post-traumatic growth in veterans. It would be great if someone did. And, you know, I'm used to being voluntold to do stuff. And I thought, okay, so I know more about it than most folks. I'm a subject matter expert when it comes to veterans. And we have the world's leading researcher here in Michigan. So when I reached out to her, she was very, very interested in creating a program, you know, specific to growth in veterans and looking at that population because it hasn't been studied. So my 5-year evil plan is to compile all this data, speak the language, have the reputation and the right initials behind my name so that I can start to shift and offer more wellness-focused services to veterans instead of the trauma-based psychotherapies. I mean, if you ask a veteran to sit there and write about and talk about and think about things that are horrifically traumatizing to them, not everyone will get better doing that. And so they need sometimes just to feel normal, just to feel better, just to feel like they're not broken. Mm-hmm. And that's really the tools that post-traumatic growth can give an individual. And so that's why I'm on that mountaintop screaming about PTG, as we like to call it in the field, and how can you get more PTG? Because it's, you know, it's free, it's readily available, and we know that even though most of us will experience some trauma, the majority of us will experience growth or more meaning or happiness in our lives as a result of that trauma. So mm-hmm. if you think about surviving cancer, right, and now you understand how what's really important. Now you change your career path. Now you get closer with your kids. Maybe you reconcile with an estranged family member, right? And now all of a sudden, you're seeing the quality of life is improving. It doesn't mean that you don't have post-traumatic stress anymore. And it doesn't mean that you don't still need other help or intervention. But let's start to talk about how we can harness this bad experience and take something good from it. And mm-hmm. that was the work that I did. And when I did that work myself, I realized that I'm happier now than I've ever been. And from the veterans who've gone through tribe talks already, I've seen some really remarkable changes. So, you know, I have a very small sample size and I have no real data yet, but my hope is to begin researching the program and then look at other programs like it, the handful that are out there, and start to push the VA hopefully in a direction where, there are options and alternatives that will suit the need of any veteran seeking help.
Well, that's one of the things that we like to talk about on our, on Veterans Radio, is we want to find out as many alternative treatments as we can, because we know that, as you just mentioned, that, you know, not all of them work, not all of them are as effective as, you know, Plan A, Plan B, Plan C. But if we can get, you know, 26 different plans going, maybe there's one that can help that one particular person who doesn't react, you know, the way that, or they don't recover the way that they should from more traditional types of treatments. But I, this sounds like a great idea, and I'm anxious to hear more about it as you start having all these successful cases that you're going to be working with.
Yeah, it's been really remarkable to see the veterans who've gone through the program and the positive changes that they've made so far. And I'm really looking forward to my first women veteran cohort.
Well, it will be interesting. So, again, for our female veterans out there, that tribe talk is going to be this coming weekend out of Camp Liberty.
Yep.
And if they want more information, they can email you at?
TribeTalksProgram@gmail.com.
Okay, TribeTalksProgram@gmail.com. And for the guys out there, look for more information out there also for the one that's coming up in July.
Right, yeah. Still email me and inquire.
Because I think it just sounds like something that's so important, I think, for all these men and women. I mean, when we were talking earlier about, and you mentioned it earlier, about the 20 suicides a day, that's totally unacceptable. And it's not just younger veterans either. And that's what's disturbing to me as an older veteran, for sure. But the point is that I mean, we keep seeing these stories about, you know, veterans are committing suicide in VA buildings and parking lots and out in front of the buildings. And I know that that's a serious cry for help that is somehow being missed. And so we've got to do whatever we can through your programs and through us making them aware of the different types of programs out there. It's unacceptable that so many of these people have difficulties. And as you said, there are so many guys, male veterans especially, who just don't admit that they have a problem going on. And we got to get them to come and see you or to see somebody. And I know that there are so many people I was talking, you mentioned John earlier, and he was talking about a couple of stories where they've talked people down mm-hmm. from scenarios, and I know that you have done that yourself.
Yeah, I have. I've, you know, kind of been at that moment and that edge, and I've seen the struggle, and it's very concerning to me. It's why I founded Tribe Talks, because if the VA is doing this but it's not working, or people aren't willing to go, you know, or it is working, and but what about the ones that it's not working for? What can we be doing for them? Mm-hmm. And this is about overcoming moral injury. This is about developing further resiliency and alternative ways to heal. We're working with horses. We're working with art. We're doing yoga. We're doing meditation. We're incorporating a lot of the things that most people would think of as alternative. But mm-hmm. when we look at the research on post-traumatic stress, each of those has something to offer any individual who participates with it.
Okay. We'll make sure we'll get there. More information. We're talking with Melissa Engel here from the VA. She's a counselor at the VA, and she's starting up her own program called Tribe Talks. We've got Kate Melcher here. We're going to be talking more with Kate in the second part of the program about what it's like to be a female veteran. And you can give us a call, 734-822-1600. And we're going to be right back after the news. You're listening to Veterans Radio. Don't go away. Bet you didn't know that I even knew who AC/DC was. But that was a song that the Army Aviators evidently in today's world love. It's called Thunder. And I played that for our guest, Kate Melcher, who was, in her time in the Army, she was a pilot of the AH-64D Apache Longbow gunship in the Army during her time. She left the Army as a captain. And we're going to be talking with Kate. We're also going to have, we have Melissa Engler here to talk a little bit more about female veterans and some of the things that they go through. In fact, you just mentioned something during the break, Melissa, and I just said Engler, it's Engel, that the number of suicides for female veterans is even higher than for male veterans.
Yeah, what we know is that females between 18 and 29 that have military service, they're committing suicide at 6 times the rate of the civilian population, which is extraordinarily significant. And with over 380,000 women that have served during OIF, OEF, and approximately 2 million female veterans, right now we're going to hit 2 million next year is what the VA is anticipating. And 21% of them are reporting some sort of PTSD type of symptoms upon release. And we know that women tend to underreport, undervalue their service at times. So it's likely that that number is even higher. So we're talking about 380,000 female veterans and at least 20% of them having some significant post-traumatic stress symptoms coming back from service.
Speaking of... All right. So, thank you. These numbers are staggering, folks, and it's just amazing to me that this can go on. We can't let this go on. But I wanted to ask Kate. All right. So, Kate, you were a captain in the Army.
Yes.
When you left. Mm-hmm. And so how did you get involved in the Army? I'm looking at you, and I'm going, why did you do this?
Well, part of the challenge of being a female vet is you don't look like a vet.
I know, we don't have the big V on our forehead.
Right, anyway, we don't all wear the funny hats. And I had a career in Washington, and I was serving my country as a civilian. I was there during 9/11 when OEF and OIF kicked off. I found that I was spending more of my time writing letters to Gold Star mothers than affecting real change for Americans, which is why I went there, mm-hmm. bright-eyed, and idealistic. And I had a mentor in the Senate who retired as lieutenant colonel, and he learned leadership from Schwarzkopf. He was aide-de-camp to General Schwarzkopf. And every morning he would come in and ask me if I'd ever thought of being a military officer. And every morning I would throw him out of my office. It wasn't, you know, I was not the kid that was looking up at the sky saying, I want to do that one day. Mm-hmm. But my life changed permanently September 11th. And that started my path toward military service. And, you know, it's interesting. We talk about the challenges that female vets have, and we talk about the challenges that vets in general have when they transition back to civilian life. Personally, I found that I had a challenge transitioning to military life, especially because of the MOS mm-hmm. that I had. I was a 15 Alpha. It's an Apache pilot. And at the time, there were really not many women doing that at all. Most units in which I served, I was the only female in that unit. And so I had to take my upbringing, which, you know, my mother was a strong feminist and raised me to believe that I could do anything that boys could do, you know, but I still had some sort of feminine sensibilities that come with being raised as a young girl in American society. And I had to figure out how to not be that in uniform. Mm-hmm. I had to figure out how to use my leadership skills and my command voice and everything else that the Army valued, my technical skills, and sort of quiet all of my femininity. So I transitioned into military, which was difficult. Mm-hmm. I always felt that I had to be twice as good to get half as far. You often hear that saying when you're talking about race. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about people of color saying that they have to be twice as good to be thought of half as much. And it felt that way as a female in a male-dominated military. But I did it. I served 8 years during wartime without a deployment. And that weighs heavy on my heart every day, especially as we approach Memorial Day. And that's part of what made my transition out of the military difficult as well. Because now I was a warfighting machine. Mm-hmm. I had been trained to fly the baddest warship that the world has ever seen. I was good at it. I loved it. I loved to fly. I loved leading troops. I loved everything about it. But I didn't get to do what I joined the military to do. So I had this huge sense of regret, this sense of not being finished with service. And I had tried so hard to fit my square self into the round peg of the military that now I'm out in the wild. I'm out in the civilian world and I'm expected to be a lady again. Mm-hmm. I'm expected to watch my language and to wear a skirt and to wear makeup and to be soft and genteel. And so my transition was trying to figure out who I was before I enlisted through all of the change and all of the rigors of training and military discipline. I still am trying to figure that out. Mm. How to take full advantage of the training and leadership that I've got and apply it to the work that I get to do every day with Fisher House. But finding that softness that the world expects of women. Mm-hmm. It's really difficult to thread that needle.
I would think so. It was hard enough coming out of the military, as you just mentioned. I mean, you were trained, as you said, to fly the baddest machine that the Army had. And, you know, they had spent, you know, millions of dollars on you, thousands of dollars on me. to fly the Huey, which was, you know, for its time period, obviously it was very, you know, technically challenged for some of us. But I think the idea is that you were trained to do that and you were good at it, and then you get out and you're, what do I do now? What do I do that can utilize the skills mm-hmm. that I have? You know, I can't go out and shoot people. That doesn't work. I can't, at the time, I figured that I had pushed my flying envelope far enough that I probably shouldn't continue flying for a while. Mm-hmm. And then I go to the University of Michigan, and these people are just unusual, to say the least, you know, when I went there. And so it is an issue that you do work with probably for the rest of your life when you're trying to figure out, you know, where do I fit in the scheme of all of these things? And mm-hmm. I know that Melissa's over here going, well, I can tell you. I
know. You know, well, most veterans.
But that's why you need somebody like her or whoever it is that you can talk to, you know, when you do feel upset. And, you know, nothing I can say is can help that you weren't able to deploy for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to Vietnam era vets and said, no, I didn't go. I wasn't there.
Yep.
And they have guilt.
Right.
I mean, it's remorse.
The survivor guilt is crushing.
You know, and it's not fair because, you know, you sign that proverbial blank check that says, hey, send me wherever you want me to be and right. I'll do it.
Right.
Well, you didn't send me.
Right.
And I think that's something that's hard. And you mentioned earlier, and I think maybe we can talk about this for a second, is that you did have some issues with that and you did seek some help.
I did. You know, the blessing and the curse of the Apache is that you're trained to be in a task-saturated condition. You're using all four appendages just to fly,
mm-hmm.
not to mention your target acquisition designation system, not to mention that you're getting your flight symbology through your one-inch by one-inch monocle. You're using all of your senses, and it is mentally and physically exhausting to go out and fly two bags of gas. And coming out of the Apache, your body still goes a mile a minute. You're still in that exactly. You're still vibrating. You're still in that task saturated state, mm-hmm. and there is absolutely nothing like that in the civilian world that will replicate that feeling. So being used to being spun up like that all of the time, I felt like I was spinning out. I felt like, you know, I needed some resistance. I needed something to grab all of that energy, and it was actually a conversation that I had with a female vet from the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
And she explained to me that it took her decades to understand that the way her PTS symptoms were manifesting in her were not the way they were manifesting in her male colleagues. And that what we know in the ether about PTSD, you know, the anger, the rage, the isolation, you know, all mm-hmm. those sort of, you know, quote unquote, typical things that we think we know about PTSD, that's not necessarily how it manifested for her. And that allowed me to look differently at the symptoms I was exhibiting.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't feel like the guys who'd been in combat. They didn't feel like, you know, my friends that I'd talked to about this. And so I didn't think it's what I was experiencing. But it took me having that conversation with her to get me to reach out and go to the vet center, which, as mm-hmm. you mentioned, there's, you know, 1,000 different ways to seek help. The vet center is a VA program, but it's sort of VA adjacent. And we're incredibly lucky here in Washtenaw County because we actually have a counselor who travels to Washtenaw County to the vet center over on Hogback Road on the second mm-hmm. and fourth Wednesdays of each month. And you can call, you know, Michael Smith's team over yeah. there and make an appointment with this therapist. And this therapist was able to reach me where I was and call me out on my nonsense that I couldn't see for myself and help me sort of navigate how to dial down that need to be task saturated all the time and to use that energy for good while protecting my own energy so mm-hmm. that I didn't burn myself out in continued service.
It's like battle fatigue for when you come home.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, I think what people don't understand about this is that it truly is an ultra marathon. When you raise your right hand to serve, your service doesn't extend just until you get your DD-214. The moral injury, the processing of everything that you saw, that you did, that you failed to do, all of that stays with you. The men and women who didn't come home, the men and women that we mm-hmm. continue to live every day for, that continues. And even with opportunities to realize post-traumatic growth, there are peaks and valleys. It's
well, I mean, that's everyday living. I mean,
right.
We all go through, you know, the ups and downs, but I think the idea of talking with somebody who can direct you. And that's what I found when I did mine. chatting with my therapist was that he was able to direct my thoughts inward instead of me always being angry with everybody and mm-hmm. everything and being, you know, just a real pain. And that, you know, you come to the realization that, you know, that you are the one that's in control. Mm-hmm. And I know that you may disagree with that, but I think the idea is that you want to be the one that's in control.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's what I tell veterans is you can't control what's happened to you, but you can control the way that you choose to look at what's happened to you. Mm-hmm. We have that choice and we have that power. And we can't go back in time yet, but when that happens, I'm sure there'll be a lot of people signing up.
You mentioned October 9th. As soon as you said that, October 9th, that's when we lost a bunch of guys. And I just went, I hadn't thought about that in a while. Yep. I want to take a real quick break here, and this is kind of a selfish thing that I'm going to do.
Okay.
Because when we come out of the break, we're going to play a song that I knew.
Right.
So if we could set up that we're going to do one more thing for Legal Help for Veterans and then a little bump music, and we'll come back and finish our conversation with Kate and Melissa. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
An old cowboy went riding out one dark and windy day. Up on a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, plowing through the ragged skies, and up a cloudy draw. Their brands were still on fire and their hooves were made of steel. Their horns were black and shiny, and their hot breath he could feel. A bolt of fear went through him as they thundered through the sky. For he saw the riders coming hard, and he heard their mournful cry. Yippee-i-oh!
I'm sorry, I had to wait till we got to the yippee-i-o thing, because that's when everybody was up and would join in the song. As a member of our platoon, we were called the Ghost Riders, so we had to have that. So anyway, what was your call sign? I never did ask that.
Outcast 1-6.
Outcast 1-6.
Informally, call sign Tuesday.
Okay. I was a Sky Chief 2-0. That was me. And inside, I was Ghost Rider 2-0. So... just for those of you that want to know what my passwords are for everything.
Yeah, that's familiar.
So anyway, a little levity is important to talk about, because we were talking with Melissa Engel, who is a counselor for the VA, but she's got her own program going, which is Tribe Talks, which sounds really great to me. The logo is Community Growth and Wellness, and I'm anxious to hear how that goes, and maybe I'll have to show up myself. And Kate, I want to talk a little bit more. You mentioned when you got out of the service, and this is a familiar story. I mean, it's, you know, we all think that we're unique, and really we're not. I mean, we are in some ways, but I think most of us ran into that problem when we got out of the service, that now what? You know, you can't slow down, as you said. Flying, being in the military in general, is a marathon. I mean, you're on duty 24 hours a day, the whole bit, especially if you are, you know, outside of the country where people can hurt you. You're at a hypervigilant.
Hypervigilant, yep.
You know, and that you never know when that particular rocket, mortar, whatever it is going to come in. And so you're that way. And then you get home, and suddenly you can go into a supermarket, and you hear somebody drop something on the other side of the store, and you're on the floor crawling under the vegetable stand coming, you know, incoming, and your wife, at, you know, down with you. I pulled her across a hedgerow when we were in Hawaii on R&R when a car backfired. Boom! You know?
Good instincts.
You know? What? What? I said, well, I'm sorry. But I, you know, and then I, you know, we tell these stories amongst ourselves as veterans, and we say, oh, yeah, Right. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You know, we've had similar experiences. And I think, you know, to have somebody like Melissa that we can go talk to, that we can, you know, express our concerns and whatever unusual feelings that we have, and maybe she can help us make sense of it. Because I know you don't give advice. You ask the questions. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Correct. Yeah, advice is a big no-no.
Yeah, we don't want advice.
I have to take all the blame and the credit, and I don't want to do that. I want you all to get better, and it's because you made the choice, right? And then empower that choice. So if it's their belief that it's because of me that these things are changing, then they're dependent upon me, and I've not done my job very well.
Okay. Let's continue on. All right. So you're out and you're trying to figure out what you're going to do, and somehow you get hooked up with Fisher House. How did that occur?
That's right.
I mean, I know you were involved in other veterans things, but I mean.
Yes. You know, I was stationed at Fort Rucker, which for those of you who don't know, the home of Army Aviation is in southern Alabama.
Yes, it is. Mother Rucker.
That's right.
That's where everybody go. That's where you go.
Can we say Mother Rucker on the radio?
You can say Mother Rucker.
Okay, she is our mother. Yes.
Because you can either live in beautiful Daleville, Ozark, or just gorgeous downtown Enterprise.
Enterprise. You can see the bull weevil statue in the city square, I promise you.
It's the only monument to a pest.
Yes. Well, I lived in Daleville because Hanchy Army Airfield is where the Apache Course was, and it was out the east side, so it made sense for me to live in Daleville. I'm sorry.
I'm having terrible flashbacks.
I lost my train of thought. So I know there was a question there,
how did you get to Fisher House?
Okay. So for a number of reasons, I left the service and decided to move back to Michigan. My dad wasn't doing well medically at the time, and I was planning on taking a little bit of a professional break, and I was terrible at that. So I went on Indeed and said, I got to find a job. And I saw that Fisher House Michigan was hiring. And, you know, having been different places on active duty, you know, I just assumed there was a Fisher House in Michigan, and I learned very quickly that there wasn't. So I got involved in Fisher House, and it has absolutely been a saving grace for me. Because it's a place where I can put all of that energy. It's a place where I can continue service. It's a place where I can talk with vets, and it's okay to use vet language.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to, if I'm having a rough day, it's okay to meet with the donor the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a perfect fit for me professionally. But mostly because I get to go to work every single day and do the work that my brothers and sisters who didn't come back can't. So we are building living memorials to them. We are building a benefit for the veterans and the families who are here. We see our role as a way to help veterans access the care that they've earned with their families by their side. When you have family with you, it's good medicine. Patients tend to heal faster. They tend to stay healthier when they have a supportive family network with them. And to be able to get to do that work every day is incredibly special. And I feel honored to be able to do it.
Well, it seems like a perfect fit.
It is. It is. You know, I know that we're getting to the end of the show, but I got to brag about Army Aviators just a little bit more. I got to do it.
Okay.
So we were talking about Mother Rucker, and for those of you who didn't catch it in the news, I'm going to tell you that Mother Rucker got a phone call from the International Space Station just this last week. And it's because one of the astronauts that's on the space station is a lieutenant colonel named Anne McLean. So female service member, she was a West Pointer, was brought up at Mother Rucker, and she flew OH-58s. She went on to all kinds of schooling, including the Navy test pilot course, did incredibly well. She was selected to be an astronaut. She's now in space currently, and she got to phone home to Mother Rucker. It was
like
a real tribute to Army Aviators.
That's a great, that is a great story. I mean, to tout the Army Aviation, it's the best in the world, and it is constantly growing and constantly evolving as it goes along. And a quick message out to our congressman, you better keep funding it, because we're running into aircraft. The maintenance is falling down on some of these things, and because there's not enough money in there, there's not enough people to keep the aircraft going.
Yeah.
And one of the stories I heard real quickly is that when you are deployed and you are a mechanic or a crew chief or something like that, is you work on your aircraft 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. You come home and you've got to do all kinds of weird assignments. You got to go to school. You work normally. You work an 8-to-5 day, which civilians don't understand. And you get 30 days leave and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So they're having trouble keeping helicopters in the air, which aren't supposed to be in the air anyway, but that's beside the point. they just beat themselves.
We make them fly.
Yes, that's it. We wrestle these guys and we beat them into the air and we do everything we can to keep them up there. But anyway, we've got about a minute to go. Is there anything that you would like to say? Or actually 2 minutes, he said. Melissa, let's remind people of your Tribe Talk.
Sure. If anybody's interested in learning more about Tribe Talks, they should reach out to me at tribetalksprogram@gmail.com. Let me know their phone number, and it's best to have these chats over the phone. Or they can give me a call or text me at 586-222-3391, and I can let them know about the program, and we'll have more dates in the future. So even if this next Thursday doesn't work or July doesn't work, then we'll find something that does.
Okay. We're going to have Melissa back on, because maybe at some point we're going to have her take your questions on the air. So, Kate, we got a minute.
Participate in Memorial Day match. Where else can you double your money? Between now and June 30th.
There you go. And go learn how to skate.
That's right.
And also go
skate
to groundbreaking for Fisher House, Michigan in Ann Arbor, 10 o'clock on June 14th, Flag Day. So we'll end the program with another reminder. Fly your flags, get new flags, and we'll see you all next week. This is Dale Thronberry talking to you on Veterans Radio. Until next time, you are dismissed.